This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mack and Roshan Gunnison. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Wednesday the 16th of December. Midway through the week, how has it been treating you so far, Roshan?
Not too bad, Lynn. It is the second week of December, which means we are 2 weeks closer to the end of the year.
Yes.
1 week? No, 2 weeks. I'm gonna stick by my first answer there, Lynn.
I've just stopped being able to math, I think, this year because of all of the... it's been a bit of a crazy year in terms of how you feel time passing, right?
Yeah, it's been very relative, actually, because it feels long, but also feels very short at times. Mm. It's a very peculiar phenomenon. I've actually read a few articles about it, trying to explain what it is, but I guess it's similar to how you consider time goes by very quickly when you're having fun, but not quickly when you are doing something that's not so stimulating or mm-hmm. gets you engaged, right? This year has been both engaging and non-engaging at times, because engaging because you're in a generally stressful environment, but not engaging because some of us have been stuck at home or maybe don't have as much work as before. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword, but
I think I realized was that all of my usual kind of time markers have shifted as well, partly because we here at BFM were working 1 week in the office and then 1 week at home, right? So it's things like I used to fill my petrol tank once every month. Right. And now because I drive to work about half the time that I used to, I'm filling it once every 2 months, which is great for my wallet, but not great for my time perception. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point to note, right? Because it's really a long time, the milestones that we consider those regular checks about mm-hmm. how time progresses, those have been thrown out of whack. So, yeah, I guess that, again,
completely thrown out the window.
And we're probably just stating the obvious to everyone out here who's listening. But I guess this is the 6 a.m. chat trying to digest what's going on.
Well,
in the world.
Maybe they identify with us, Roshan. And if you do, you know where to find us online. WhatsApp 01878988899, Twitter at BFM Radio. But a quick look at what's happening in this next hour. 6:45, we're looking at our local papers and portals. What are we talking about at 6:30, Roshan?
We'll take a look at the first top Republican to basically acknowledge the Biden presidency following the Electoral College vote yesterday. We're also talking about Singapore opening up for business traveling and New Zealand's foreign minister to offer to help broker peace between Australia and China. I think there have been some tensions there we've talked about over the last few weeks. So a few updates on all those. All those news? All that news.
All right. And about 6:15, we are looking at the merger between some tech super giants and, of course, a bit closer to home as well, asking you what would your year in pictures look like? So that's all going to be happening in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Velvet Underground with Beginning to See the Light, and you are listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. No light to be seen, actually, so far this morning, because it's only 6 a.m., the sun will come up later in the day to herald yet another wonderful Wednesday, and we have an interesting topic to discuss.
Yeah, but just going back to the title of that song, Lynn, Beginning to See the Light is something, a theme that we're seeing with the vaccine optimism we're beginning to see, right, as the year comes to an end. And after a year that has been quite, absorbed by the pandemic, right?
Yes.
I think that's to say the least. And actually, we stumble upon this article on Bloomberg, taking a look at the year in pictures. Now, obviously, this is more American skewed. So we're going to try and make it more Malaysian skewed today, this morning, and try and take a look at the year and kind of like, what are the key moments and photos that bring to that you would put on a collage, I guess. If you made a collage of 2020 to represent the year, what would it look like? And I've got a little list in front of me. And from a Malaysian perspective, I honestly can't remember anything before the Sheraton move. I can't remember a photo. So if you have a moment before things went crazy in Malaysia, please let me know. I'd love to add that to my mental collage over here. But so I think some of the key photos and moments would be a photo of people entering Sheraton before the move, before all that took place. And of course, a photo of Tan Sri Mulyana Singh being sworn in, right? That journey there is one of those moments. But from then on, it's really all about the pandemic, because you've got the images that come to mind are PPE, food delivery, frontliners.
Yeah.
All that, those are kind of all the photos that we have for the 6 months, the roadblocks, and then more recently,
temperature temperature checks.
Temperature checks. And then as we come to the end of the year, it's a lot more of just like the different photos we see related to vaccine optimism, which is hopeful, but also images of things like more empty malls and car parks being open, things that we would have relished 12 months ago, an open parking space is now a signal of a lack of activity.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't really agree with the idea that this is particularly Western skewed, because this is honestly looking, I scrolled through this list of pictures on Bloomberg, right? And this could have been really anywhere in the world, because everyone is undergoing this pandemic and has the same images, you know, associated with 2020 of people in masks with, you know, holding temperature, those little temperature check guns, frontliners in PPE. I saw recently something on social media saying, you know, whoever won the Time Person of the Year, the actual people of the year are, you know, are these people. And it was a collage of doctors, all of whom had pressure sores over their noses and on their foreheads from constantly wearing personal protective equipment. Because, you know, it's not comfortable. Everyone hates wearing masks, but these people who have to do it day in, day out, they're starting to see the physical marks of that on their faces. And it just goes to show that as uncomfortable as we find it out in the public, how much worse is it for these frontliners who are doing their best to ensure that the rest of us also stay safe, right? And on a personal level also, I was wondering, what would my year in pictures look like? And honestly, for probably the first half of the year, Rona, after March up until sort of like July, August-ish, honestly, I think all I can remember is just the four walls of my bedroom, because even when we were coming into the office, it was because we're essential services, right? Broadcast. It was it was bereft of all of the things that make the office lively. So, you know, the off water cooler conversations, the laughter that you have with people whom you don't work directly with, right? You know, it's the shouting across the aisle at someone else. Most of what I remember is the isolation, which is unfortunate, because and I think this is why, you know, when we talked about what we remember of 2020 and why it feels so short, I think this is why people don't really have a lot to say about this year sometimes. That isn't negative, and it's unfortunate. But then hopefully, you know, we are seeing the light at the end of the tunnel with vaccines on the horizon.
Yeah. It is something that takes a moment for you to kind of look back and remember, right? And I know it is tough, but sometimes it is important, I guess, to try and find a silver lining in amongst all the turmoil for the last year, because it at least gives you a little bit of, like, even if it's a small thing, it could be some form of personal growth. I know people who've been doing online courses and things like that. I know friends who've lost their jobs and they try their best to look at the bright side of things, even though it is a bit more of a concerning element. But yeah, so going back to the overall picture of the year, and you're right, Lynn, like, I was mistaken when I said that this was more Western skewed. What I meant to say was more global skewed, right? Mm. I wanted to take a look at more Malaysian focus. But if we take a look on the global front, I mean, this year has been a year of protests, right? Whether it's the US or yes. Hong Kong or Thailand, we've had a lot of protests around the world. So we have a lot of non-COVID events as well. I mean, we had the US election.
Some of which people would have said exacerbated the COVID situation.
Yeah. We had the US election. We had the South Korean election as well. And Singapore had its election this year as well. And there was always talk about we would have our election as well. We had Sabah. We had the Sabah state election. We had one by-election before mm-hmm. that. So it has been a year of elections. It has been a year of the managing the front line of the frontliners. It's been a year of interesting politics. It's also the one of those silver linings. It's the end of the Trump era, hopefully, at least in the White House, right? But let's see what he does after that. But on top of all of that, we have to also acknowledge the economic fallout, right? So let's see how this goes forward, and let's look forward to 2021 and the next normal. We're still in the new normal. What does the next normal look like? That's also something maybe you can let us know. Brainstorm it and give us some suggestions of what we should be looking forward to the next year.
Yes, and tell us what your year in pictures would look like. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some messages coming up, and then we are looking at some tech news. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Valerie by Amy Winehouse, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. 6:20 in the morning, Wednesday the 16th of December. And this has, you know, we're just talking about how 2020 has been a year dominated by pandemic news. But it's also been the year, a big year for technology, right? Because most of us, when we've been stuck at home, we've been forced to adopt Slack, Microsoft Teams, all of these different applications to in order to keep work going while at the same time not being physically in the office. And Fast Company has an interesting article talking about the announcement that Slack would sell itself to Salesforce, another big tech behemoth, for $27.7 billion. And this article, it's interesting because it talks about how Slack wanted to be independent, but in an age where big tech has come to be the dominant player that it is, was this an effort doomed from the beginning?
I don't think it was an effort doomed from the beginning. Right? It's just that things turned, the tide turned for them quite significantly. On top of a lot of other things, let's get out some of the financials out of the way, right? Because it's an era of cheap money. There's a lot of money sloshing around. Everyone's looking for something to buy or earn. We're looking at the tech. We talk about tech companies here, but the pharmaceuticals are also doing the same thing. We've seen mm-hmm. AstraZeneca, was it Astra? I think buying a pharmaceutical firm recently that also that focused on rare diseases.
Yes.
Here, what we're seeing is that essentially tech companies use their network effects, right? The bigger the company, the more users they have, the more they can just plug in a feature into their system and wipe out the competition. Or in this case, just make the competition a lot less able to run on its own, right? So Microsoft has a massive enterprise solutions, arm. And when we take a look at this partnership or acquisition from Salesforce with Slack, Salesforce also has an enterprise division, right? So it's come to a point where the Slack management team has come to a point where independence comes at a cost, right? So if you want to really survive and thrive in here, you need essentially to go into a walled garden. We've talked about this before. Every big tech company has their walled garden and that services suite around that. Mm-hmm. We were talking about a similar thing yesterday when Google services went down. Right, everyone's got their own kind of
ecosystem,
and it's essentially partnerships, right? It's like if you want to build out a service, sometimes you have to find partners who can give you access to customers and things like that. Now, whether this becomes an antitrust concern is another question, because we're seeing a lot of that. We're seeing whether it's the App Store. Apple's getting a lot of flack from that from Capitol Hill. When we take a look at Facebook, they're also getting a lot of concerns over that and whether how they're using user data. When we take a look at the antitrust concerns, right, a lot of it typically comes down to whether it's hurting the consumer. The sentiment I'm observing now is whether that is changing to a sense of, is it hurting the consumer not by prices, but by a lack of competition? Because arguably, and as I think this Fast Company article author also agrees here, that the Slack service was better than Teams. It's a more nimble product that was able to cater to more individuals, mm-hmm. as opposed to having to join Microsoft Office's 365 solution and then take up Teams as a value added. Slack was built as a solo product and was very well integrated to a lot of other situations.
So it's not just about price. It's also about choice.
Yeah. But on the flip side, you've got Zoom, right? Zoom has done well this year, but how long can that last? If big tech goes after them and knocks at their doors, I'd be interested to see whether Zoom partners up with Salesforce and Slack here. It would be interesting to see how their trajectory takes. But the more interesting one is to see how the antitrust situation plays out, because it was in the 90s when the government went knocking at Microsoft's door. Now the governments are doing it again. The FTC is suing, I think it was Google, was that right, or Facebook. They've also done their inquiry. The DOJ has done their inquiries as well. So the DOJ sued Google, and I think the latest one was the FTC and Facebook. So we're seeing that happen now. whether more plays out is going to be a very interesting question.
Yeah, and I think with antitrust, even Slack made a complaint against Microsoft earlier this year because of the fact that Microsoft essentially took Slack's product and just integrated it seamlessly into the existing ecosystem, their walled garden,
I mean, Facebook did it as well with Instagram, right? Instagram integrated stories, essentially taking a Snapchat feature. LinkedIn now has stories as well. WhatsApp has stories.
Twitter now has stories as well.
So where is that line between natural integration and progression and copycatting, and whether there are any IP concerns there? Oh, that's going to be an interesting battle going on. But here is that consolidation story is something that keeps playing out.
So let us know what you think about this. You know, in this era of tech supergiants, do independent tech companies still have a place in this ecosystem? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're about to head into the 6:30 news, after which we will be taking a look at what's been happening on the international stage. But first, some music. Here is Queen of Hearts by Juice Newton, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Feel Good Inc. by Gorillaz, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Roshan Karnison. It's 6:40 in the morning, Wednesday the 16th of December, and around about this time every day, we take a look at what's been happening in the news on an international stage. And of course, in the US, the holdout over whether or not President-elect Joe Biden would actually be acknowledged by members of the Republican Party, whether or not he would actually have his position confirmed by the Electoral College, that appears to have been put to bed, because yesterday saw the Electoral College cast their votes. And now Mitch McConnell, who's the Senate Majority Leader, he has congratulated Joe Biden for his win.
Yes, the Electoral College confirmed what we already knew, that the Democrats won, or Biden won, with 306 Electoral College votes as projected to Mr. Trump's, to Donald Trump's 232. And I think what this does is, after a month, Mitch McConnell has finally come out to congratulate both Joe Biden and Kamala Harris for their wins. And this might give cover for the for other Republicans to come out to congratulate and acknowledge the victory, right? Because I think most of them didn't do this before this because they did not want to go on Trump's bad side.
Yeah,
I think that's
pretty
much the case.
You wonder whether this is a signal of the Republican Party breaking away from Donald Trump, right? Because it's not. There is really no precedent for a president to be refusing to concede the election kind of so late in the game, right? And because the White House press secretary continues to make you know, comments as to the ongoing litigation, even though the case has been, Trump's cases have been thrown out in multiple states by this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you read some of the reports, I think his last, Donald Trump's final play could be challenging the election loss in Congress on January 6th. His last stand. But that becomes more pointless now as we look at, well, first and foremost, the Democrats control Congress. And two, with Mitch McConnell, who's the Senate Majority Leader, also acknowledging Biden's win here, that becomes a less likely thing that he'll gain any traction in the Senate. And for more on this, actually, in about an hour, we will be speaking with Robert Shapiro, Professor of Government at Columbia University, to give us some of the takeaways from the election, as well as what the look forward could be, both for Joe Biden and for Donald Trump, and whether he sees any traction happening for him going forward in terms of Donald Trump's traction.
Yeah, I mean, well, 73 million people voted for Donald Trump, right? So there is still some cause for him to say that he may take a 2024 run. Who knows? Anyway, looking a little bit closer to home as well, Singapore has started a new travel lane for business, official and high economic value travelers that'll allow people to come to the city-state without quarantine for short-term visits, and they'll stay in a dedicated bubble facility near the airport. So this is one of the first, I think, segregated travel lanes that we've seen in this region. And Singapore was originally set to open something up with Hong Kong, but that didn't happen. I think that got called off at around last month because of concerns over Hong Kong's rising cases as well.
Yeah, no, Lim, when you you said bubble facility, I immediately thought about a dome. And it brings up, I think there was a TV show around this, and I think there have been plenty of movies around encapsulating a city with a dome. So I know that's not what it's going to look like. Let's be serious here.
I had images of people walking around in those big inflatable plastic bubbles. Fantastic. You know, the ones that you can like play human bumper cars with.
But you know, all said and done, this is a positive development, especially for a country like Singapore that depends a lot on of people coming in and out, right? Because it's such an international hub for business, for policymakers as well. So this could be very good to see. And Singapore's economy is small. Singapore is a small country with a very open economy that is dependent upon tourism and the services sector, right? So to that end, I think they've been trying to do this for a while. I think there was a little bit of a hiccup a few weeks back when they were supposed to open the Hong Kong, and then last minute that got the 11th hour, that got pulled because I think the cases are resurging in Hong Kong. So this is a good move forward. Let's see where this travel bubble starts to open up, where the corridors that we start seeing. I mean, the countries that come to mind include countries like New Zealand and Australia, right, who have really managed this pandemic quite well now, or at least the cases have come to a point where it's very manageable. And hopefully, in the not too distant future, we open it up to Malaysia, because we know that Johor Bahru, or Johor itself, there's a lot of trade and a lot of jobs that go back and forth between these two cities and the city states. That could be very important for Malaysia.
It could be indeed, but I guess it'll have to wait until our number of cases come down, because I think yesterday we reported 1,700 cases. Selangor is still the highest contributing state, if I'm not mistaken, but other states not far behind. And we're going to be getting into that more in just a couple of minutes when we look at the front pages of our local papers and portals. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Well, that was Do You Remember Rock and Roll Radio by the Ramones. Unfortunately, we are not rock and roll radio this morning.
In case that confused you for a second.
Oh, it certainly confused me. But anyway, that was a nice song. You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Roshan. It is 6:51 a.m. Wednesday? It's a Wednesday, the 16th of December. And we are looking at the front pages of our newspapers and portals this morning. And I think all of them are carrying a story today about the passing of Unku Aziz, Unku Abdul Hamid, who was the Royal Professor of Economics at University of Malaya, and in fact the only person to ever hold the title of Royal Professor in this country. It was conferred in the late 70s. And this is the passing of an icon, right? He was 98 years old, so a good long run. And he has made contributions in many fields, including education, economy, poverty eradication. A great loss indeed to the country, and our condolences to his family. We do have some other things as well, I think, in the papers.
Yeah, but just to note as well, he was related. He was also a prime mover in some of the biggest establishments that we've had in the country, right? So Lembaga Tabung Haji, Dewan Bahasa and Pusaka, and the National Cooperative Organization of Malaysia, I think more commonly known as Angkasa. So he has been involved in, not directly in civil service and things like that, but he was an academic, right, throughout his career. So, and I think he's most notably, not most notably known for, but when we say condolences to the family, of course, he is the father of the former Bank Negara governor, Tan Sri Dr. Zeti Aziz, who's now the group chairperson of PNB Group. Mm-hmm. So our condolences to the family.
Indeed. And in the papers this morning I've got the New Straits Times in front of me. Their front page is the end of an icon. And here they're talking about the Penang ferries, which will cease operations the end of December after nearly 100 years of service.
Oh, I have a lot of fond memories going on the ferries, but I guess it's been a tough time for them to run as a viable business, right?
Absolutely. And heritage groups are apparently calling for them to be preserved as tourist attractions, but whether or not that gains any traction at all, that remains to be seen.
All right. And arguably, I think the biggest news that we got yesterday was the final passing of the budget. Budget 2021 is through. Parliament is over and until the next session. And the budget passed with a vote of 111 to 108, keeping in mind that the House now has only 220 members because of passing of two MPs. And some are saying that this is basically because when we take a look at the budget vote, right, it's also an indirect vote of confidence in the government of the day. So what does this do for Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's position as the Prime Minister and his government? Honestly, it probably secures it quite more significantly because Parliament's not in session after this, and he's got the budget through.
Yeah, and conversely also, what does this mean for Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim's support? Parliament is standing on a knife's edge, you know, a gap of three votes. That's incredible. This is something that we are going to be talking about later with Dr. Bridget Welsh of the University of Nottingham's Asia Research Institute. So that conversation is happening at about 7:45. If you miss it, it'll be up on podcast later today. But do stay tuned.
Yes. And if you did the math there, you will note that there was only 209 votes out of the 219 out of 220 votes, because there was one absentee vote. And that was Tengku Razali, who had the press conference with Tun Dr. Mahathir earlier this week. And he has been consistent throughout this entire time, right? He's his statement or his position was he didn't want to vote to what he said was to legitimize this government. He's stayed out of it for the most part here. And even though Tun Dr. Mahathir did call for opposition, for members of parliament to follow their conscience and things like that, the government has gotten the budget through, and now it'll go to Dewan Negara for their reading, and then after that to the Agong for it for the royal assent. This is the first time that a block vote has been called for the third reading of a budget. So that's also quite a bit of history, I guess, that this was taken all the way to the last day of this parliament session.
Yeah, and one wonders how different a block vote would have gone at the second reading of the budget. But, you know, all that is unfortunately in the past, and a block vote was not called at the time.
Again, going back to that thing you mentioned earlier, Lynn, what does this say about Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim's position as opposition leader, right? Because end of the day, where is that strong, formidable majority that he said he had? Was it 2-3 months ago at this juncture? Still nowhere to be seen.
Yes, so this is something that we will be watching very closely because now that the budget is passed, it's also time for, it's also, once it goes through the Senate and the Agong, implementation is also going to be the next question on the table.
Yeah, and very quickly, I think Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri has noted that some tourism and sports activities will start to reopen as they start to open up more of the economy, and more details will be coming as the technical committee meets to get those SOPs across the board.
Right, and we're bringing you more business news and analysis after the 7 o'clock news bulletin, which is coming up next. But first, some music. Here is CCR with Cottonfields, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.